When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Talking Hockey Sense. I'm Chris Peters, and this is episode 110 of the podcast. I've been going at it for a while now, and glad to be with you this week because we are getting into the thick of things. College hockey postseason is here. It is happening, and it is going to be very interesting. A lot on the line in the coming weeks, and a lot of teams that will still be in the mix here for the NCAA tournament. We're going to get into the teams that are on the bubble, the teams that have a real good chance of making it, and we'll also preview each of the conference tournaments, many of which start this weekend, with the exception of the NCHC and Hockey East, not getting going for another week yet. So we'll get into the weeds on that as well, but we'll also talk a bit about the Hobey Baker race, which has been wide open all season long, and I think as we get to the end, we're not a whole lot closer of narrowing down the list of players that will be up for college hockey's top prize. And after we get through that, we will go and get a couple of fan questions as well. So really excited to answer those listener questions, as they are always thought-provoking and give me a lot to think about. So let's get to the topics at hand. But before we do that, just want to remind you, if you haven't yet, subscribe to this podcast on your audio apps of choice. You can also watch every episode on either flowhockey.tv, the Flow Sports app, or you can watch it on YouTube as well. Just search for Flow Hockey across social platforms. We also got a lot of breakout clips from last weekend and the weeks before that you can see across our social media platforms. Lots coming for you there. So make sure you are staying tuned to that. So we have lots of great Talking Hockey Sense content for you, and you can stay up to date with the podcast. All right. So as I mentioned, let's talk a little bit about the conference tournaments. And of course, at Flow Hockey, we have the CCHA and Atlantic Hockey postseasons available. You can watch all of those games with a Flow Hockey subscription. And my goodness, have both leagues been intriguing, but the CCHA in particular has been absolutely wild all season long. It's coming down now to the quarterfinals. This is how it will break down: Bowling Green against Michigan Tech, Ferris State against Bemidji State, Northern Michigan against Minnesota State, Lake Superior State versus St. Thomas, and then that is the quarterfinal. So looking at that group, Bemidji State just won the McNaughton Cup. They finally end the reign of terror of the Minnesota State Mavericks, who had won the previous six cups. The McNaughton Cup goes to the regular season champion of the CCHA, formerly went to the WCHA regular season champion. There is a lot of history in that trophy, and it means an awful lot to win it. Bemidji State winning it for the first time. They were the last team to win the McNaughton Cup before the big run of success that Minnesota State enjoyed under Mike Hastings. But just by winning the conference in the regular season means nothing for Bemidji's tournament hopes. If you want to get into the NCAA tournament as a CCHA team this year, you're going to have to do it through the CCHA tournament. So everything to play for. We start with a best of three in the quarterfinals. We go to single elimination semifinals at campus sites. Championship, the highest seeded team will host the championship game. And so it comes down to essentially winning this series in the best of three, winning two straight to get to the NCAA tournament, and also to win the CCHA title. So a lot to play for. Very intriguing conference. A lot of parity, as we saw. Some teams that took steps back, some teams that faltered in the middle of the season. You know, a lot of these teams not finishing with a record above 500, and when you factor in the non-conference game. So it was a bit of a tough year for the CCHA. There have been the last few years where they've gotten teams in as an at-large. That won't happen this year. So everything is available to play for. St. Thomas cannot play in the NCAA tournament because they were promoted from Division III. They have a waiting period before they can play for the NCAA tournament. But don't expect the Tommies to not go for this championship. They had a tremendous season, a lot that you can really respect and enjoy about what they did this season, because that was a team that had a lot of doubt coming into the year in terms of what they were going to look like, how competitive they would be, and they end up being a very, very strong competitor in the CCHA. But let's just take a look at the standings here in the CCHA and how close this was. So Bemidji State ends up winning the league. They sweep their final season series against Minnesota State, just a tremendous series and an emphatic win for Bemidji State to claim the McNaughton Cup. They're well ahead of Michigan Tech with 39 points. St. Thomas had 39 points, so there's a tie for second. Minnesota State at 38, really costly weekend for them at Bemidji. Northern Michigan, Bowling Green rounding it out, and then Lake Superior State. All those teams had 34 points. Ferris State had 19, so Ferris will have to play Bemidji State on the road. And, you know, even though Ferris has had a tough season, there's enough there to say, hey, maybe they could upset. You just never know at this stage of the season. Anything can happen in the conference championships. But what an incredible year in the CCHA. The tournament starts on Friday, so you can start watching games 1 through 3 if necessary on Sunday. The entire weekend, we will have every single one of those games from the CCHA available to you on flowhockey.tv, so do not miss that. It has been a tremendous year, great hockey, incredible finishes, and really looking forward to that. Now we move on to Atlantic Hockey, and Atlantic Hockey has been intriguing as well, and they had a bit of a new postseason format this year. Remember, Robert Morris came back in, so there were 4 play-in games to get into the quarterfinals, single elimination. Canisius beat Mercyhurst, Niagara beat Army, and Robert Morris beat Bentley, and that is how we get to our quarterfinal matchups. So the game of the weekend, and we'll get to it a little bit later, Robert Morris beating Bentley in their first year back from hiatus. Now they got to go play RIT. And let me tell you, RIT to me is the favorite for this tournament by a lot. But again, you look at teams like Holy Cross, you look at Sacred Heart, you even look at the teams that got into the play-ins or an AIC or an Air Force, teams that are very difficult to play against. RIT is going to have their hands full because, like the teams in the CCHA, the only way in for Atlantic hockey teams is to win the auto bid in the conference tournament. RIT has been outstanding, but you look at a team like Holy Cross that's had a really strong season overall, a team that is, you know, hung around in a lot of games, and there's a lot of parity in this conference as well. You look at the way that the standings shook out in Atlantic hockey, RIT won the league. They clinched it. Holy Cross finished second with 46 points. Right behind them was Sacred Heart, Air Force, just a point behind them. American International, a point behind, or 2 points behind them. So really tight in the top 6 of this conference. And then Robert Morris, who finished 11th in the conference, beats Bentley in overtime to advance, and so the Colonials are very much back and have to be feeling good about themselves. But RIT is the team that I think, if you have not been paying attention to Atlantic hockey this year, RIT is a team that overall, they're 22-10-2. They've got some big wins over this season against non-conference opponents. They beat Notre Dame earlier this year. They beat New Hampshire earlier this year. Those are two teams that are looking like they're going to be on the outside looking in potentially for the NCAA tournament. They beat Clarkson in non-conference, Lake Superior State in non-conference. So this is a team that picked up enough non-conference wins to say, hey, we're not just feasting on the Atlantic hockey schedule that we have. We are playing some very meaningful games, and there were a lot of great games. So we could see this Holy Cross RIT that looks like they're a bit on a collision course, but nothing is guaranteed. We're into the best of 3 portion of that tournament. If I were a betting man, you know, certainly the money's on RIT in terms of who will come out of this conference. And the other thing that I want to say about RIT is if they get into the NCAA tournament, they are not going to be an easy out as the 16 seed, because that's basically been the default position for Atlantic hockey teams. 16 seed, if they are in there, that likely means they play Boston College, and Boston College is an absolute wagon, but RIT is not to be trifled with. Let me tell you, I've been watching them this season, and there is a lot to like about the program that they've put together. this year in particular. All right, moving on, we go to the Big Ten, and this was a very interesting final weekend. Michigan State goes to Madison to with a chance to win their first ever regular season Big Ten championship. It's been, you know, since what, 2011 that we've had the Big Ten, and Michigan State had not yet won a regular season conference title. Well, that's over now. They end up getting a split with Wisconsin. They really only needed one regulation win. They got it on the Friday night. They were able to celebrate with the Big Ten regular season trophy. They get a bye into the Big Ten quarterfinal or semifinals, rather, where that'll be single elimination. So basically, you've got teams coming in. You got a whole week off. You get a chance to prepare. It'll be either Michigan or Notre Dame. Those are the teams that are in the bracket. So, you know, you could potentially play one of your big rivals that you've had some success at against this year. You got Notre Dame, which is a team that you probably feel like you have a chance against. You know, I think Michigan State won't fear anybody with the way that they've played, but that's the top seed. Michigan State will play Notre Dame in that best of three series this weekend. Wisconsin versus Ohio State. And Ohio State has been on a bit of a tear at the end of the season here. They actually beat Wisconsin, probably cost them the Big Ten regular season title. So that's an intriguing matchup. It will be in Madison. And then you've got Minnesota versus Penn State on the other side of that bracket. The potential collision course for a border battle in the semifinals with Wisconsin and Minnesota there. If I'm looking at this and the way that these teams are playing, I think Wisconsin is going to be very dangerous in this tournament. Kyle McClellan is kind of a sneaky Hobie Baker candidate. He's probably the favorite to win the Mike Richter Award. And what a job he's done in net for Wisconsin all season long. I think that's going to be fascinating to watch that tournament as well, because these teams have beaten up on each other all season long. Now you get down to this situation where there are some teams that are going to be clawing for some playoff positioning and some NCAA tournament spots. I mean, Michigan, the Wolverines, are a bubble team right now. They've got to get some wins here in this tournament. They've got to make quick work of Notre Dame, and they got to try to get past Michigan State and improve their chances here. But they are looking at, you know, the possibility of an auto bid situation as well, because as it stands, if, you know, all the favorites win, that's great news for them, but they are still very much on the bubble for the NCAA tournament. We'll get to the tournament picture in just a little bit. As I mentioned, NCHC and Hockey East, they are still in their regular seasons, but ECAC will start their first weekend, and this will be their single elimination first round before going into the top four teams, which all get byes, getting byes in the ECAC tournament. Quinnipiac, Cornell, Colgate, and Dartmouth. How about Dartmouth getting into the top half of the ECAC? Not a team that you would have predicted would get a bye here, but they do. The Big Green, led by head coach Reed Cashman, making some ground in the ECAC, and very impressive there. The first round matchups as we have them: Princeton versus Harvard, Yale versus St. Lawrence, Brown versus Union, RPI versus Clarkson. And this is going to be an intriguing tournament, because you've got obviously the defending national champion in Quinnipiac. They are the regular season ECAC champion. They did a great job throughout the season of winning and winning consistently. They finished with 17 regulation wins and two regulation losses. Two regulation losses, just really impressive. Three overtime losses for Quinnipiac. They had a 10-point advantage in the standings over Cornell, which finished second. Colgate was 1 point behind Cornell with 43 points. And Dartmouth edges out Clarkson for that last bye. And so that'll go into basically a first round, and then you go into the quarterfinals, you go into the semifinals after that, and the ECAC championship will be crowned at Lake Placid as per usual. Not a lot of neutral site games anymore, but ECAC has one. So that is what we're seeing at the conference level. Now, these next few weeks are going to be critical. Last week, we talked about college free agents becoming available. There are going to be a lot of teams whose seasons will end as early as this weekend, so stay tuned for that. But teams that are still with so much to play for in this entire season, there are basically eight teams that are mortal locks for this tournament. And College Hockey News, which has the pairwise probability matrix, gives you a great picture. They do all the math for you. Thank goodness for that, because I can't do it. So shout out to College Hockey News for doing the math here. But in their pairwise probability matrix, eight teams have a 100% chance of reaching the NCAA tournament. And that gives, you know, that includes their opportunity to make it as an at-large and as an automatic qualifier if they were to win their conference championship. So number one, Boston College. Number two, North Dakota. Number three, Boston University. Number four, Denver. Number five, Michigan State. Number six, Wisconsin. Number seven, Minnesota. Number eight, Quinnipiac. And that is the eight teams with a 100% chance. 99.6% chance for Maine. And then you look at UMass, 87%, and then this is where it starts the precipitous drop of opportunity. Providence, 78%, Colorado College at 12th, Michigan at 13th. Basically, there, if you are 13 through 16, you're in that kind of butt-clenching zone. You're in that, you're getting nervous. You're saying, we need to make sure that we take care of our business in these next couple of weeks and try to improve our stock here to get into the tournament. But you also now, you're saying, hey, we might have to win the whole thing just to have a spot here. And if you are those teams that are in that range, you're also hoping that teams like Boston College go ahead and win the Hockey East and that North Dakota wins the NCHC and that there aren't any surprises, because all of a sudden those spots become scarce. But, you know, you look at a team like, we had UNH was for a long time this season was right in the mix for a tournament spot. They've fallen down to 18th in terms of the pairwise. You know, Arizona State is now basically almost no chance of making the NCAA tournament. We talked a bit about last week about that fight in Fairbanks, and I think that was a lot of frustration boiling over. But boy, what an incredible, incredible couple of days here we're going to have in college hockey, because a lot is left to play for, a lot left to be shaking out here. So we're going to have to see where everything goes in these next couple of weeks. But make sure you watch CCHA. The Atlantic Hockey tournaments, both available on Flow Hockey. And remember, automatic bids on the line in both leagues, so much to play for. And boy, you watch the quality of a CCHA broadcast, you listen to the Atlantic Hockey broadcast, we've got so many great things there. So make sure you check those out. Get subscribed today. Also this week, wanted to remind you, ACHA. So we've got the ACHA, American Collegiate Hockey Association National Championships. Every single division, all five divisions, Division I men, Division II men, Division III men, and both women's divisions, Division I and Division II, will be airing on Flow Hockey, all played in St. Louis between March 7th and March 17th. It is 10 days of great college hockey, and we will crown the ACHA national champion. And as a product of an ACHA school at Iowa State, the Division I trophy is named after Dr. Al Murdoch, who was my first boss in hockey. So that is what they play for at the Division I level. But obviously, everybody playing for that national championship, a chance at glory for many of these players who have been able to extend their careers in college hockey thanks to the ACHA, and we love to watch that. All right, that's the conference tournament previews. Now we're going to talk a bit more about the Hobie Baker watch, and this is so wide open, so unpredictable. Want to point out, I'm not on the Hobie committee. I've never been on the Hobie committee. But, you know, I like to think that they've selected fairly predictably over the last few years in terms of what they do. And the thing about it is, as I look at this, at the list that I've put together of the players that I think are most likely to challenge for the Hobie Baker, it's a lot of underclassmen. It is freshmen and sophomores primarily. That is probably one of the most intriguing things about this, is that you look at the top of the scoring leaderboard. You look at the top of the scoring leaderboard, and there are in the top, just in the top 10, there are two juniors, no seniors. It's otherwise all freshmen and sophomores. Will Smith is the nation's leading scorer with 54 points, and he is a freshman. Cutter Gauthier is the nation's leading goal scorer with 31. He is a sophomore at Boston College. And then you look, Jackson Blake, third, sophomore. You know, Gabe Perreault, tied for third in scoring with 50 points, freshman. You know, so it is really, really interesting to watch this race. And the other thing is that these highly, highly productive players, a lot of them play on the same team. That is going to hurt their chances. Boston College is probably not sending four players to the top 10 of Hobie Baker. It tends not to happen. I don't think it'll happen here. It'll be interesting to see how that vote ends up getting split, because that is a tough decision. You know, you've got, in terms of points per game, the leading player is Gabe Perreault. He has missed three games with an injury, but he's still the nation's leader in points per game with 1.67 points. He has 50 points in 30 games. Just absurd production for a freshman. But as I go down this list, and you know, you certainly look at the top scorers, you look at different guys from different conferences as well. They like to have variety. They like to reward upperclassmen. But I just think that this award is more likely than not going to go to a freshman or a sophomore. So as I have it, in no particular order, you know, this is what I'm looking at for a you know, the guys that I expect to be very firmly in the mix here. Cutter Gauthier of Boston College, Will Smith of Boston College, Macklin Celebrini, of course, from Boston University, Colin Graf of Quinnipiac, one of the top in points per game as well, Zeev Bouyam out of Denver, Massimo Rizzo out of Denver, Jackson Blake from North Dakota, Gabe Perreault from Boston College, Lane Hutson from Boston University, and the goalie Kyle McClellan of Wisconsin. If you look at some of the other conferences as well, I think Liam McClinsky of Holy Cross will be one of the guys that could potentially get into the top 10. He has a chance to be an All-American. He's also a guy listed on my free agent list that you can read on flowhockey.tv as a 6'3" forward that's produced this year. But the guys that are really interesting to me, it's those Boston College guys, because I really do feel like they're going to split the vote, and that might open the door. And we saw it last year. We basically had, you know, the University of Minnesota had a number of players that made it. They had two players in the Hobie hat trick. One was Matt Nyes, the other Logan Cooley. Ultimately, Adam Fantilli wins the Hobie Baker last year. I think we're looking at a chance where Will Smith and Cutter Gauthier are part of the Hobie hat trick. You look at Smith, 54 points in 33 games, leading all players by 3 points, with Gauthier coming in second with 51. But I do think that goal scoring and the seniority of Gauthier gives him the best chance of the Boston College players to be the Hobie Baker winner this year. And I think you could say he's been deserving as well, because not only has he scored goals, he's scored consistently, and he scored big goals this year for his team. He is, you know, ten of his 31 goals have come on the power play. He has 181 shots on goal. The puck is constantly on his stick. He's a plus 20, which really doesn't matter in terms of the voting. We would expect the Boston College guys to be significantly up in the plus minus rankings, and they certainly are so far this season. But I mean, really, it is tricky to break this down and set, give you a who's going to win. I think you've got to keep Macklin Celebrini firmly in the mix as well, not because he's a draft prospect, but because you look at Boston University and he has been the significant driving force of that offensive attack all season long. The next closest player in terms of points is 9 points away. That is Lane Hutson, his teammate, who I also put in my mix here for the Hobie Baker. He was in the mix last year. But you look at what Zeev Bouyam is doing at Denver versus what Lane Hutson did last year as a freshman defenseman for Boston University. I thought Hutson deserved to be in the Hobie hat trick last year because, hey, he was the best freshman defenseman season we'd seen since Brian Leach. It was incredible in terms of his production. And now we're seeing Zeev Bouyam outpace that production and certainly, you know, be a significant player for a top tier team. So as we look at that, you know, you say, okay, well, there's that. The guy that could throw the wrench in the whole thing is Colin Graf from Quinnipiac. And he was a part of the Hobie top 10 last year. He was certainly a guy that deserved to be considered for the hat trick based on what he did. He continued to perform at such a high level in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, this is a guy at one point this year that was averaging close to 2 points a game. His production has slowed, but he has 20 goals, 26 assists in just 29 games so far this season. He is among the top guys in points per game as well. Currently sits fourth at 1.59 points per game. And he's a junior. So does the Hobie committee lean towards the player that's been around longer? Do they shy away from giving it to a freshman or a sophomore because they're likely not going to be around next year and would like to reward a player that stuck around? The thing is that I don't see a senior in this mix that could really take it away from them. And that's the thing that strikes me, is that the Hobie committee is going to have to look at this as objectively as possible and they're going to have to ignore seniority because, quite frankly, the best seasons belong to freshmen and sophomores this year. Not to take anything away from Colin Graf, who I feel is very firmly in the mix, and we still have a ways to go. We have an entire postseason to get through before this is decided. So at this conference tournament weekends, these are the most critical times for players to separate themselves. But the guys that I just listed off, I think, are the guys that are most firmly in the mix to be part of the whole thing. So I'm really excited about that, to see, you know, such a robust class of players and such an incredible tight race for this award. You know, guys that I didn't mention that I think are certainly still going to get consideration. Ryan Leonard, Jack Devine, Rucker McGroarty, Gavin Brindley. You know, those are the types of players that we could certainly see get in the mix. But boy, what a lot of producing players we had in college hockey this year. All right, so Hobie Baker is going to be interesting, but I also wanted to spend a few seconds to talk about something that we saw, and this is our As Seen on Flow Hockey segment, because one of the great things of watching hockey every single weekend on Flow Hockey is getting the chance to flip around to different games and to see what's happening where, and then you say, hey, there's an overtime game, I got to go check that one out. And it just so happened to be Robert Morris versus Bentley. It was an incredible finish to that game. Cameron Garvey ended up scoring the game-winning goal on a heartbreaking turnover from Bentley's goalie. Went to play the puck, was trying to, you know, find the outlet, went backwards instead of forwards, and on the stick of Garvey it goes. He wraps it around. Bentley's season ends on that play. Shocking fashion, because Bentley was just a whisker away. They lost the tiebreaker to get a bye out of that round. And so they lose that opportunity. They fall victim to Robert Morris and the Colonials, which did not play for the last two seasons, get back, you know, had to rebuild their program. You know, head coach Derek Schooley said after the game that they are just feeling this level of gratitude, just being, having that gratitude of just being able to play hockey at this point. And we saw it, you know, you see the joy on that, the faces of that team, and you think about the struggle of Robert Morris to get through, and to, you know, a lot of guys, a lot of transfers on that team, a lot of guys that had opportunities at other programs. They didn't have an amazing season. They finished last in the conference, but here they are. They have an opportunity to continue their season in a best of three series. It's going to be tough against RIT, but boy, was it amazing to watch that and to see, you know, Robert Morris find a way to get in to that game and to create an opportunity where they won it and stunned Bentley, and certainly gave themselves a shot in the arm that they probably were sorely needing after all of the heartbreak of the last few seasons. And you also have to give a shout out to the Robert Morris women's team, which had a very successful season themselves, getting into the CHA playoffs and getting an opportunity to move on. They ultimately fell short, but again, you know, two programs that were essentially out and gone and dead and buried for many people, through a lot of hard work, they came back, and now they got rewarded with some great moments like that. So you love to see that. All right. As we do every week, I want to move into our listener questions, and we're going to get through these pretty quick as we got some, but there are a lot of really great stories here. So our first question comes to us from Kyle, and it's about the college free agency. We talked a bit about this last weekend, but we will do it again here. Kyle asks, what is your prediction on where Colin Graf lands? Any insight on teams he's interested in or showing a lot of interest in him? Well, Colin Graf, as we mentioned, number one unrestricted free agent in college hockey this year. Last two seasons, nobody has scored more points than he has in the NCAA. He is a highly intelligent playmaking forward that has really grown, and you have to give him a ton of credit for what he's, the time and effort that he's put into his game and what he's turned into. As far as where he goes, it's really anyone's guess at this point. I don't have any read on his preferences. A lot of these guys won't really talk about free agency. They want to, you know, focus on their season. You know, it's not something that I've gone around asking a ton about. But I think, you know, a lot, the little whisperings that you hear is that, you know, there's that he's really you know, could potentially stay East. He's a Massachusetts native. Certainly, you know, I think the Bruins should absolutely be a team that's interested. I would assume the Rangers, which are always in the college free agent game, will be sniffing around as well. You know, I think that those are the types of teams that usually have a very robust recruiting plan for the top free agents, and they've been successful. I mean, you think about Boston, some of the guys that they've been able to get. You know, Torrey Krug is probably one of the best, most recent examples. Frank Vetrano a couple years back as well. You know, so those are some of the players that they've gotten. You know, New York, Jimmy Vesey, probably one of the more high profile guys. They had Bobby Trevino a couple of years ago. He hasn't quite made it to the NHL yet. But I mean, that's I wouldn't be shocked to see either of those teams very firmly in the mix for Colin Graf. Our next question comes from Union and Blue, and this question is about Gavin Brindley, who, of course, is a Columbus Blue Jackets prospect. And this is, will another year of NCAA hockey be beneficial for Gavin Brindley? So Gavin Brindley's having a really great season overall. He's been outstanding. He was part of Team USA at the World Junior Championship in each of the last two seasons. He wins gold there last year. He was one of their best forwards and through a lot of that tournament, one of their most consistent forwards. And so we're talking about him, and you look at the production that he's put together. He's now currently eighth in the NCAA with 46 points. And, you know, he is certainly a spark plug player. He had 38 points last season. He improved his goal total by 10 this year. The thing is, Brindley is an absolute speed demon, but he is undersized, right? So great motor, great work ethic. I think he's an NHL player. I think he's going to make it to the NHL. I think he's going to be a spark plug player at that level, and he is going to make a difference. The question that I have is, how much time does Gavin Brindley want to spend in the AHL? That is probably the question. Like, and I've said it, I said it on last week's podcast. The AHL is a fairly critical step for most players. But I do think that, you know, the amount of time a player spends in the AHL tends to go down the longer they stay in school. And Brindley is one of those guys where he could probably make the jump as early as next season, and maybe he will. That seems to be the path. I think a lot of Michigan players are more two and done than one and done. But it's rare to see the top end guys stay for a third year. That'll be the question. And so, because I think if he does come out after this season, I think there will be AHL time ahead for him in Cleveland, which wouldn't be bad. It'd be great to get him playing against men, getting understanding the pro game, understanding the pro pace. But this is a player that has taken considerable steps every single year. And I think he absolutely has an NHL future. It's probably in a middle six role, providing scoring depth, killing penalties, doing a lot of the little things that help teams win. But he is a guy I absolutely root for all of the time. Undersized, but incredible work ethic and just an absolute spark plug player who can also produce. So would he benefit from another year of the NCAA? I think any player can, you know, he's been pretty close to dominant this year, but Michigan as a whole has been a little bit underwhelming. Is there a sense of unfinished business? Does he want to get back to the opportunity to play for a national championship? Michigan is bringing in a pretty good recruiting class for next season. Does he feel that's enough for them to go and make a run? Do they go on a deep run this year and that satisfies that need? Do they win a Big Ten championship again? All of these things are still in play. Those are all the types of things that a player considers. You know, Brindley, I think, could go either way. Would he benefit from another year? Sure. Does he have to stay? Probably not. But this is a player that I think, if you're a Columbus Blue Jackets fan, you should be very excited about because he is playing well above his draft slot this season. All right, our next question comes from Jenna, and Jenna asks about the CCHA. The CCHA has been bonkers this year, no kidding. It wasn't until the last weekend of the regular season that BSU pulled away and only five points separate second through seventh. Any thoughts on why all the teams were so inconsistent and how Bemidji was able to pull away with eight straight wins? Really good question, and honestly, you know, being at Flow Hockey, I ended up watching quite a bit of CCHA hockey. And this year I watched a lot of games where I saw teams that, you know, either didn't really have a true identity or they found it late or they didn't, or they've had it and they lost it. That was kind of interesting to watch this year. I think that in terms of why were teams so inconsistent, I don't think it was inconsistency. I think it was true parity in the league. There have been so many years where Minnesota State was just so head and shoulders above everybody that they couldn't hope to catch up. That was a little bit less true last year when Michigan Tech had such a great season. I think Tech has dealt with a lot of injuries. They've dealt with, they had Blake Pietl has not played as well as he did last season when I thought he was one of the best goalies in college hockey last year. That hasn't been the case. Goaltending across the league has been up and down. You look at the emergence of St. Thomas. So you're increasing the number of competitive games. When there's more teams that can play, the parity goes up. St. Thomas was a legit threat to every single team in the league this year, which was not true in previous seasons. So that's really fascinating to watch as well, is that St. Thomas was a real threat throughout this year and still are. And if they win the CCHA, whoever they beat will end up going to the NCAA tournament instead of them, because of some NCAA rules about teams that move up from Division III. But the Tommies are certainly going to be fighting for some hardware this year, and they are not to be messed with. They are certainly a team that can do it. I still think that Minnesota State is the team to beat in the playoffs. I still think they have overall the most depth, but no question, you can't take anything away from Bemidji. The way that they played down the stretch, they got goaltending, they got timely scoring, they got players that really committed and bought into team defense. They completely shut out Minnesota State over the weekend. And they have guys like Leighton Rode is a player who didn't make my free agent list because I didn't have any great intel that there were a lot of teams after him. But he's the type of player that I could see a lot of NHL teams showing interest in. A guy with great motor, a guy that's been a leading scorer for them. Jackson Judding was a solid, had a big weekend for them against Minnesota State. So they have enough players. So I think that is a wide open conference championship. You look at the experience that some of these teams have versus some of the new guys, trying to get things going. It's just been a wild, wacky year. I wish I had a better explanation for why it's been so good, but I just think parity has ruled the roost in the CCHA this year. All right, our next question comes from Sensetennial, and Sensetennial asks, "Hey, Chris, who are some of your favorite NCAA players this year who you believe may go in the late first round or slip into the early second?" Well, there aren't any current NCAA players that I see that, because I think that, Zeev Bouyam, I think, will go pretty high. Artem Levshinov will go pretty high in the draft. And obviously, Macklin Celebrini, we expect to go number one. So current NCAA players, unlikely to go. But incoming NCAA players that are going to be late first, early second round picks, I think of Matt Vegradin, committed to Michigan. He's played at Muskegon. He's been very good. I think he has a chance to sneak in the first round. Probably more likely he goes early second. But that's a guy that, has some size. He's got scoring pop. He's done a lot of things this year. Production is way up year over year for him. Very intriguing player there. Michael Hage, who will also be at Michigan next year. I think he's a guy that could go late first, early second, just like Gradin. A guy that I think will go a little bit higher in the first round compared to those two is Sasha Boisvert from Muskegon. We've talked about him a bit on this podcast. So there are a lot of NCAA-bound players that will probably go in that later range. EJ Emery, who we've talked about a bit here. Guys like, you look at second round, Teddy Stiga, some of those players that Christian Humphreys, all these guys that are NCAA track. But I think if you're a University of Michigan fan, you're going to see a lot of familiar names and recruits go in that late first, early second, and all the way into the third to see a lot of new recruits coming in. All right, our next question comes from Dux Keys, and Dux Keys asks, "How great will Cutter Gauthier, and Macklin Celebrini look together in Anaheim next season? Also, should Gabe Perreault be an untouchable for New York Rangers heading into the trade deadline?" Very interesting. I had heard Perreault as an untouchable prospect. I think that's probably, you look at what he's done this year and you say, hey, we've got maybe one of the smartest overall players outside of the NHL in terms of hockey sense and playmaking ability. That's a guy we certainly want to hold on to. The thing is if you are the New York Rangers and you feel that your window is now and you feel that you have a team capable of making this run, you have to kind of pull out all the stops. Now, trading away Gabe Perreault might not be the play. Trading away Brennan Hoffman might not be the play. But that's still, I think the threshold for players that are untradeable as prospects is always ridiculously high. And I think sometimes it's too high. And I think sometimes teams are too precious about their prospects. And there are also times where you trade away Philip Forsberg for Martin Erat. So, you know, you never know what can happen. I mean, I think that there are teams that don't want to make that mistake. And I'm sure that, you know, Chris Drury has to feel that they were very fortunate for Gabe Perreault to be available to them when he was. And I would say it'd be highly unlikely to trade him. But would I call him an untouchable? And do I think he should be an untouchable prospect? I don't. Not if you can make a significant impact player added to your roster that you think is going to help you win a Stanley Cup. I just think that teams sometimes need to be more aggressive. And that's also partially wishful thinking, because I also want more entertaining trade deadlines. I wish we would see more prospects go. We've seen in the last few years, and certainly we'll be covering it on Flow Hockey when we have prospect breakdowns, the guys that get traded at the deadline. But I just don't think I could say that Gabe Perreault is untouchable per se. To answer your first question as part of that two-parter, how great will Cutter Gauthier and Macklin Celebrini look together in Anaheim next season? I mean, they'd look great if they were going to play together, but, you know, obviously the Ducks have to find a way to win the draft lottery. I think the San Jose Sharks, Chicago Blackhawks, teams like that will try to find that out. But these teams are certainly, if Anaheim were to get Macklin Celebrini, and then they already add that to Cutter Gauthier, Leo Carlson, Pavel Minchukov, you know, all those great young defensemen, Olin Zellweger, Lucas Dostal has been so good in net for them as well as a rookie goaltender. You know, maybe he's part of the longer-term solution in net for them as well. So, I mean, if you're the Anaheim Ducks, that would be a huge lottery win. But Ducks haven't had great lottery success in their history. All right, our next question comes from Hawks Hockey. This one is, in the event a more bear team like Chicago wins the draft lottery, is Macklin Celebrini more likely to be employed as a 2C behind Bedard or as a wing on Bedard's line? Great question. I just think that Celebrini is such a natural center that you want him driving his own line. A 1-2 punch of Celebrini and Bedard, with Bedard being the number one center, is insane. I think in the long term, if you didn't want, of those two players, I would rather have Bedard on the wing than Celebrini. I know that sounds crazy because of how good Bedard is, and he is excellent. But Celebrini's two-way game is so far advanced compared to Bedard's at this point. And that's not to say that Bedard's is bad, because he's a highly competitive individual that really does take care of, you know, what he has to do. He doesn't cheat for offense. He's engaged. But I really think that Celebrini, to me, is the guy that you would have as your 2C. He'd drive his own line. You'd want to continue to filter players around him, allow him to utilize his scoring ability. But he does everything so well. I just think you always want him in the middle no matter what. All right, our next one comes from Gene Parmesan, who is probably part of one of my favorite running bits from Arrested Development. This is, Gene asks, could you see Murat Kuznetsov as an eventual Zuccarello replacement, smaller playmaking forward, I guess I can't read right now, with a good motor? I mean, I think that's the natural comparison. I've always thought that Kuznetsov is very similar to Zuccarello in the way that he plays. I would say, you know, that Murat is even more aggressive and more competitive, which says a lot, because quite frankly, you know, Zuccarello is an incredible competitor on top of that. But the reason that Gene is asking this, if you haven't heard, is that Kuznetsov was let out of his contract with HK Sochi early. And so it was about to expire. They canceled his contract, mutual termination. It allowed him to sign his entry-level contract with Minnesota. Now he's got to go through the visa process. He's got to get approved to come over. It sounds like he's going to join the Wild. Will he play for the Wild? We'll have to wait and see. I could see him spending some time in the AHL next season as well, which shouldn't scare anybody. I think that that's a good thing for him. He needs to get used to playing the North American style of hockey. You know, his production over the last 2 years was solid. But, you know, it went down a bit this year. So, you know, you want to make sure that you're getting him on track, get him used to the NHL game. But boy, what a player. Super fun to watch. You know, listed at 5'9", he's at 165 was his last listing. You know, he might be a little bit more on that. You know, I think the value that Minnesota is going to get out of a guy that they got second in the second round is really solid. I like the player an awful lot. I think he's going to help them long term, but we'll have to wait and see how it goes. But I think as far as Zuccarello replacement, you know, that's the kind of role I think we could see Khuznetsov play. So really good stuff there. All right, this is a pretty fun one from Horace here. Horace asks, this is very subjective, but isn't everything that we talk about here? Who are the best five head scouts currently in the NHL? Which five NHL teams are the best developing their prospects in your opinion? Well, this is a really interesting question. It can go a lot of different ways, and I think that there are a lot of different teams, but I wanted to focus. We talked a little bit last week about Dallas Stars and Joe McDonnell, who is their director of amateur scouting. And I think when you look at what they've done in the last couple of years under his guidance, and he's been with the team for a really long time. He's been with the team for quite a long time, which you know, there's just so much to appreciate about somebody that's been there. You know, he's been in Dallas for 10 years, basically came over with Jim Nill, and before that was with the Red Wings. But you look at that 2017 draft, you look at the Stankoven draft, you look where he was the second, Johnson and Stankoven. I mean, obviously the Stars are getting a lot out of their team. So I think you have to put Joe McDonnell in that conversation. You know, he's not really a head scout anymore, but Al Murray still kind of in the wings with the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think Al Murray is one of the legends of the business. I think his amateur scouting, you know, and talent evaluation is outstanding. I mean, you think about not just the players that Tampa Bay has drafted, but also players that they have signed as unrestricted undrafted free agents. And they always seem to get something of value from those players. It's, you know, they just signed a guy, Gabriel Sturts, from the WHL last week. And it's just like the same philosophy that led them to Tyler Johnson, that led them to, why am I blanking? Led them to so many of their players. They have a guy, you know, Alex Barre-Boulet, who's kind of in that same mold, who's, you know, he's been mostly in the AHL, but he's gotten some time in the NHL as well. So I think, you know, Al Murray's in that mix. You know, beyond that, I think like there's just so many different things. You think about some of the guys that have been at it for a very long time, you know, and the different kind of things that they do. It's hard to say, you know, because I think there is a lot of turnover in that job. Obviously you're often tied to your general manager, but it's such a critical job. I think, you know, historically you look at guys like Jarmo Kekäläinen, you know, things didn't work out in Columbus. I mean, but he had a long career as a general manager, but he might be one of the best talent evaluators in the business. I mean, he made his bones in the Blues organization as an elite talent evaluator. And as a guy that was going to help them draft some of the best talent. And so I really think that that's another, you think about guys like that. So I don't want to go and give you like a top five, because I will inevitably leave people out. And that puts me in a bit of an awkward spot, because these are the people that, you know, sometimes I have to talk to about prospects and stuff. But there are a lot of great, great hockey minds, older, younger, in the NHL. And I think the one thing I'll say is I think scouting has never been better. I think that they've never had more information, never been more open to using more information, never been more liberal with their use of video to get more views on players. They don't miss as much as they used to. And even the very best will have mistakes. They will have things that didn't work out because it is that hard of a job. But there are a lot of great ones. I think, you know, guys like Al Murray, Joe McDonnell, Jarmo Kekäläinen, you know, historically guys like that, Gordy Clark, you know, there are so many greats in this industry, that it'd be hard to narrow it down to five, but there are so many great ones out there. As far as teams that develop talent, I think I look often at Tampa as setting a gold standard for the build up to their Stanley Cup. You think about how they built from the ground up, and that they drafted well, they got college free agents, they got guys that were, you know, underappreciated. They had those late draft picks like Andre Palat and Radko Gudas and all these guys that turn into NHL players. They made the aggressive play to draft the goalie in the first round and got Andre Vasilevsky. They had good lottery luck with Stamkos and Hedman. But when you have that, you still have to develop. And think about Nikita Kucherov. He spent time in the AHL. Braden Point spent time in the AHL. They always seem to go through that process. Historically, that's been true of like the Detroit Red Wings. And when you see that what Steve Yzerman did at Tampa, it feels very reminiscent of the Detroit Red Wings plan. I think that they've still, there have been some years where they haven't been as good at that more recently, but I also don't know that they've had the best stuff to work with at that level. But you're seeing it play out now. So historically, the Red Wings have been very good at developing talent. I think you look at Washington with Hershey is always one of the best AHL teams, and I think that that shows. I think that that's a team that has done some remarkable work being competitive, but also still developing talent. You look at guys like Alexei Protas, Connor McMichael. Some of these guys have been tweeners. Some of these guys haven't panned out. But even John Carlson spent a significant amount of time in Hershey and before getting called up to Washington. That's where he was before he had that World Junior moment. So that's another place where traditionally they've been a solid developer of talent. And even Dallas too. You look at Dallas, Jason Robertson. I mean, he had to find his way as a pro. And it took a little while in the AHL to figure out how he's going to have to play. So they call guys up at the right times. They allowed Logan Stankoven to find his game in the AHL this year. So I think there's a lot to like about the organizations that do that. But I think Tampa, in most recent memory, was probably the best overall at not just creating a competitive team, but developing talent in-house. Winning a Calder Cup when the Norfolk Admirals were still in Norfolk in the AHL, and they continue that with the Syracuse Crunch today, and they're constantly getting guys into their mix that have come through their minor league program. So those are some of the ones that I think are there. All right, our last question comes from Kyle, and it allows me to do a little bit of self-reflection. So Kyle is going to allow me to do that here. Do you ever look back at guys that maybe didn't get drafted high or go undrafted, but then grow into great players like Brandon Hagel to figure out what may have been missed or apply some of the qualities they showed to the way you scout so you can find those diamonds in the rough? Oh, Kyle, absolutely. And I think this is one of the only ways to get better. You have to continually kind of go back and reevaluate everything you did. Now, I don't have as much time to really dive into players like that. I tend to do it more with the players that were on my radar and I either didn't list or listed them too low, listed them too high. And I think about, okay, what were the things that led me to that decision of where to place that player? What are the things that I maybe missed? And in some cases, it's simply a development arc. I think of Brandon Hagel as a perfect example of a guy that has not only developed, but developed at the NHL level. So, he starts in the AHL and, in the Chicago system starts back in junior, but in the Chicago system in Rockford, goes and he starts playing the NHL and then he gets with other players and he just continues to develop and he's developed at the NHL level. That's part of it with him. But there are a lot of diamonds in the rough out there. And I think the one thing that you can never there are just not many players that don't work hard that will make it. Guys that you can see either lazy habits in their game, you can see that they're not as competitive on the ice, you can see, that maybe they're struggling with fitness and different things like that. Those players are easier to spot. But those guys with the great motor, the guy that might be undersized, but he's on every puck, you start seeing little things like that. So compete is always going to have to be present in these players that are the diamonds in the rough. If they're going to be a diamond in the rough, that means that there's probably elements of their game that aren't dynamic. So it's going to be a work ethic thing. It's going to be a physicality thing. It's going to be a size thing at times. What are the players that have those pieces? So there are so many different ways that can go. And I think one day, maybe I'll just kind of go way in the weeds on the process and we'll just nerd out together. You, me, the audience, we'll talk about all those types of things. But there are so many things that can be learned from your mistakes. There are so many things that can be learned from the players that did hit. You know, I think about, you know, Wyatt Johnston is a player that I was way too low on. Dallas took him in the first round, and boy, is he a heck of a hockey player. You know, those are the ones where you just like, you really have to review. And I think, you know, some of the COVID year guys, you know, I think you can live with those mistakes a bit more, but now that we've gotten out of that, you want to, you know, have better accuracy. And that's certainly something that I hope that we'll have going forward here, but it's always fun to do. You know, you have to take self-reflection is incredibly important in evaluating others, because if you can't evaluate yourself, how the heck are you going to evaluate all these players? It's a big hockey world, so you got to stay on your toes. But thank you for the questions. And thanks to everybody that sent in questions. You can always hit me up on Twitter at Chris M. Peters. That is where you will find me to ask questions for the podcast, and always great to do it. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode. We made it through. And I just want to say a quick thanks to our producer, Josh, who has been manning the dials back there. And also thanks to everybody that sends in questions, and especially everyone that listens to this podcast every week. We continue to grow week by week. And to help us continue growing, please make sure to leave a kind rating and review on your podcast app of choice. Get the word out, share it, show it, let people know where to find it, and certainly follow us across social media platforms at Flow Hockey on most, at Flow Hockey TV on TikTok. So that is where you will see much, much more on Talking Hockey Sense. That is going to do it for this week's episode. My name is Chris Peters. We'll catch you next time.